Kevin Blackestone, Pablo Torre, Mina Kimes. Look at this defense. Everybody's got jokes, but Harden turned it on Giannis. And Houston 120, Milwaukee 116. One of the great games of actually, there's been a lot of great games of this recent start. Two schools of thought, though, last night. This is no big deal because it's the first week and Milwaukee never loses games. This was an anomaly. Never loses games like this. They were up 8 with 3 minutes to go. And the other school of thought, this is a huge deal. Milwaukee's always too reliant on Giannis, and he's apprehensive down the stretch sometimes. They're always apprehensive down the stretch sometimes. And this could be a fatal flaw for the team with one of the best records in the league. Pablo Torre, around the horn to you. Was this about Milwaukee for either of those reasons, or maybe it was about Houston for you?
This was about Houston, Tony, because James Harden's 6 steals stopping Giannis in the post, that's shocking. But here's the other, perhaps even more shocking detail about this team. Russell Westbrook isn't shooting threes anymore, so what's happening? He's scoring 31 points in the opener, 31 points against the Bucks. Those two guys are somehow the best versions of themselves now, and the fact that the Rockets went in there and shot 61 threes, that's how many they attempted. This is tripling down on all of the weirdness of this tiny small ball lineup, and they have wingspans, man. Not height, but they have long arms, which tells me that they're actually bigger than you think, and they're better than we think.
All right, so this is about Houston for you and tripling down on the weirdness, which is your own personal motto. Kevin Blackstone, about Houston or about Milwaukee for you?
No, it's got to be about Houston because they have the strangest defense in the NBA. It's horrible for most of a game until it really matters. And that's what you saw last night. The last 5 minutes, they only let Giannis score once, and they turned the ball over to themselves 3 times. So that was great defense. And to put that with the scoring, the pressure that their offense puts you on you an entire game where you're chasing them, you're trying to keep up with them on the scoreboard, stay ahead of them on the scoreboard, for them to be able to do that in a short amount of time is a recipe for success for that sort of a team.
Mina Kimes, I'll bring you in here. Do you agree with Kevin and Pablo? This was about Houston, or maybe Milwaukee and not finishing the game is the big story for you?
I agree with them that it's about Houston, but I think it's important to explain why or how Houston did it, right? If you had heard, okay, Houston beat Milwaukee and they jacked up a ton of threes, you'd think they would have made a lot of those threes and would have an incredible shooting night. But Milwaukee actually held them to under 40% shooting. Okay, they out-rebounded them by more than 25 rebounds, and Milwaukee scored more than 110 points. In the history of the NBA, when teams have done those three things, they have gone 177-0. Now it's 1. Ooh. So how did Houston do it? Defense, yeah. As my colleagues have said, defense, which I never would have guessed, by the way, going into this postseason, that these baby Rockets would play incredible defense down the stretch. And if they can keep that up, continue forcing turnovers, even if they're getting out-rebounded, they can compete in the West.
There it is. 2 games into the restart. Now we're reassessing the entire conference, Mina Kimes says. Fine, I appreciate that. Pablo, are you with Mina? Reassess the Western Conference now?
I can't pick the Rockets over the Lakers and the Clippers. I love the experiment. I love the weird, but I've seen too many playoff games, Tony, where the Rockets shoot a million threes and they miss a million threes, so I'm a little too scared to do that.
Blackstone, are you reassessing?
I still won't put them ahead of those two teams, but the thing is that one of these times they are going to shoot all those threes and make enough of them to beat you, and that's what's got to put fear in those other two teams.
Don't forget, the Rockets are one of the 17 teams who think the short season benefits them, so you never know. Mina, since you were so quickly to reassess after 2 games, what are you doing with the East now? You saw Milwaukee. It's an anomaly. They don't lose games like that. But down the stretch in the playoffs last year, they had some problems, and then it reemerged last night and maybe even Friday against Boston. Go ahead, Mean.
I think that's a totally valid criticism of Milwaukee. I also think they didn't have Eric Bledsoe. They're still a front runner. I'm not reassessing them. I am not reassessing the Raptors, who continue to be quietly excellent. I am reassessing the Sixers, and not just because Pablo Torre is on today, but to me, what we saw out of them and Shake Milton, that is the real concern coming out of the East.
Okay, Pablo, now that your name's been invoked in the Sixers with Embiid and Milton, and also Mr. TJ Warren throwing up 53 on them, pick up the pieces of your life here.
That was like a summer league game. Come on, these guys show up. It's game 1. They're getting the rust off. I mean, look, am I shocked that TJ Warren dropped 50-plus on Ben Simmons and Matthias Thybulle, who normally defend Opponents like Velociraptors? Absolutely. But does not make me lose faith in them or the fact that this team has all this talent. It just needs to gel a little bit better together. I am obviously going to stay on this hill and defend it.
And Kevin, I think you want to talk about those Velociraptors. Please, go ahead.
Absolutely. I can't believe the slander against the Rockets and Nick Nurse. Unbelievable. They have the best record since mid-January in the NBA in either conference. They're the best defensive team in the league. I mean, they just held the Lakers to less than 100 points. Nobody's done it as many times this season as these Raptors. They got guys who can score on you, like Kyle Lowry just did the other day. They play very well. They've bought into Nick's system. They are the defending champions. And without Kawhi Leonard, still no problem. Come on, people.
You brought up Nick Nurse being overlooked. Coaches made their coach of the year pronouncement today, right? And it was Budenholzer, and it was Billy Donovan. Nick Nurse was a vote short of having a three-way tie there, but he got overlooked there. Okay. So,
unbelievable.
Headline, nobody's worried about the Bucks, but you like the Raptors more, Kevin.
And absolutely.
Teams like Mina's giving them a shot as well. Let's move on, talk about the big news from this weekend from the Pac-12, the We Are United movement. And hundreds of players signing on for the conference to address racial injustice in programs and health and safety in the pandemic and payment and name and likeness. Or they might opt out and not play this season. Immediate fallout seen in program like Washington State head coach Nick Rolovich. There's a transcript obtained by the Dallas Morning News detailing Rolovich's call with a player who was opting out and the pressure being applied by coaches on players for signing on to the movement. Kevin Blackstone, what do we have here?
Well, what we have is a situation where this pandemic has exposed college football as a racial justice issue. That's what's going on here, because it is a sport that is run mostly by white athletic directors, white coaches, white administrators of universities, and it's played mostly by black laborers who are not remunerated, nor do they have the benefits that the people for whom they sweat and bleed get off of their backs. And for once, finally, players are coalescing around this issue, because this is an issue that has to do with their health and everyone else's health. If I, as a faculty member at the University of Maryland, am being told not to come back to campus because of health and welfare concerns, then why should football players be going back there? For one reason, mm-hmm. and one reason only, so that they can generate revenues for the college athletic industrial complex. And that is absolutely unethical and immoral.
So all these demands and requests, they're expansive. I mean, like I said, it was about payment. It was about health and safety. You believe it's unilaterally about racial injustice.
Absolutely. All of those issues come under that umbrella, and people need to get hip to it right now.
Been 4 months of this conversation, because we did talk about Clemson. We did talk about Oklahoma State programs, players in Iowa talking, and even today, TCU allegations in TCU, and the players refused to show up today for practice. I'll bring in Mina Kimes here. Where are we today?
Well, where we are is we've got a group of players who are not only very brave, because this took courage, but also very smart and did us a service, I think, in drawing a connection between everything that you just described. Race, money, health, it's all connected. It's always been connected, but that connection has never been more apparent than in this moment. Earlier this summer, Tony, when the protests for racial equality began, you saw a lot of these programs and coaches talking about the need to address structural racism, often without defining what that is. These players in this document have defined it for you. Because as KB laid out, structural racism is a disproportionately black workforce subsidizing not only disproportionately white staffers, but also disproportionately white sports. It's asking them, compelling them rather, to come in and put their bodies on the line amidst a global pandemic that has an outsized impact on their community, and to do it without a central body protecting them. I think they should be applauded. I think this is a starting point, and while a lot of these demands probably won't be met in this time frame, I'm glad that they're out there.
You say that, and that's interesting to me, because defining it as expansive as they did, and demonstrating of what a lot of people have said, this is not a symptom, this is the actual apparatus that is structurally and systemically flawed, and racist here. Do you believe being that expansive helps them in this threat to mm-hmm. opt out of the season or to negotiate here?
I do, because if you go back and look at the group of players in Northwestern who tried to unionize years back, their demands were a lot smaller, and they were shot down. So it's not like making smaller demands means you're more likely to have them met, right? I think what they did here is the beginning of a process, and I hope it continues beyond this pandemic and this season.
Pablo, can I bring you in here? Do you believe as expansive as these demands are, helps or hurts? But more specifically, what do we have here?
We have a negotiation, Tony, and these demands are a starting point in a negotiation. So as college sports has become more disorganized, as the NCAA is revealed to be pretty powerless in this pandemic in terms of their ability to solve any of the crises facing their athletes and their coaches and administrators, the athletes themselves are more organized than they have ever been. That's the big difference. This is about labor organizing, hundreds of players unifying to pose a credible threat. And this was unthinkable very recently. Before this year, before these last 6 months, the college athlete was powerless. Now we're seeing them flex their muscle because they realize that given the broader climate around racial justice in the country, and now given the very clear inequities in the pandemic that trickle all the way down to colleges, right? So they're pointing out in this movement, for instance, Stanford has really rigorous testing protocols. Other schools don't. Those athletes at those other schools don't want that. Why would any of their parents want that? And so there is just a real clarity and a harsh relief now that, okay, maybe this is actually a terrible deal, which means that even if these athletes are only going to be there for a few years at most, it's worth putting their own careers on the line for a longer-term change, which is exactly the bet that the NCAA was hoping these players would never make.
Right. So to the question, what happens now? Where do we go from here? And also to a question some are asking, there are so many dominoes here because the demands are so expansive. A question that many are asking, what happens to Title IX here if we're going to open up all these doors? And does that not undercut some of the demands these players are making? To that you say what, Kevin Blackstone?
I say listen to what Mina just told everyone. These black athletes produce the revenues that create the sports for women to play and for white men to play at the universities. That is a cudgel that has been used against this argument for years, and people need to put it down.
So you would say invoking Title IX here?
Title IX has nothing to do with this.
A scapegoat to the discussion here and the greater discussion?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for your thoughts on this, guys. We're going to take a break right here. We'll be back in 2 minutes with Buy or Sell Major League Baseball.
Around the Horn is presented by Corona Extra. Find your beach. Part of Happy Hour.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guarantee Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
9 baseball games today, only one postponement for COVID. That's progress for this league. Miami may be approaching the end. No positives today. Philadelphia, who knows where they are in it. St. Louis, maybe just got in it. More positives yesterday, multiple was how it was described, all the while Rob Manfred saying players need to do better. Forget everything that's happened the last 2 weeks, the group text that decided the Marlins would play, the COVID bus, all the postponements, where the players have been going out or where they haven't been going out. For Manfred to say the players need to be better, is that the most direct route to steadying this season? Mina Kimes, first to you.
No, I'm buying that he's correct, that the players do bear some accountability for this, but so does Rob Manfred, right? I mean, going without a bubble in the first place was a two-way street, and it turned this season into basically an experiment for personal responsibility, much like the same experiment we have had in this country that we as a society have failed. And like society, even if 95% of the players follow the guidelines, all it takes is 5% to fail. When Rob Manfred agreed to these terms, when baseball agreed to them, they agreed to that.
Pablo Torre?
But that is why the players do bear a responsibility, I think. That's probably surprising to people who are used to criticizing the commissioner as a matter of reflex, which I always understand. The issue here is that you're betting on behavior modification. When the Marlins are going out in Atlanta, allegedly, right, and that is causing other players to be frustrated with them, I think the question then becomes, well, okay, these players then have the fate of the sport in their hands as a body. But is it realistic for any of them to actually stay disciplined? That's where you can kill Manfred, so I understand Mina's point, but to me, it is still about the players and what they end up doing here.
And Kevin Blackstone?
Well, this is one time where a sport is really reflecting society, right? We have an administration that has been all over the place and trying to get a handle on the impact of the pandemic on its business, and then we have people involved in the business who are very important to the business who have not been able to control themselves to keep the business as viable as possible within this pandemic. Neither side has anything to hang their hat on in this situation, and they are together in trying to make it work down the end.
So when you hear the commissioner say, I have the power to end this season if you guys don't change, and I will, basically, I'll turn this COVID bus around if you guys don't sit down in the back, do you believe that's a real threat or an empty threat, Mina Kimes? Three words or fewer.
A real threat.
Real threat? Pablo, how about you?
Undeniably real and sad.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Kevin?
He won't do it.
He won't do it. We'll move on. Let's talk about the Mets and Yoenis Cespedes. Stop me if you're shocked this happened between the Mets and Yoenis Cespedes. I'm not being stopped. Can't stop, won't stop, so I'll continue. Cutting through all the baloney and gabagool here, was Cespedes upset he was being benched because he was struggling so bad and maybe not going to hit his contractual bonuses? Or was it Corona concerns on the behalf of Cespedes? And was the team upset that he was upset and more than happy to send GM Brody Van Wagenen out there to post a missing persons report? Pablo, what do we have here in your city?
This is the most Mets chaotic version of a pandemic scandal, Tony, because Brody Van Wagenen, the wonderfully named GM in question here, was Cespedes' agent before he was the GM. If there was any GM in baseball who would have been best suited to stop all of the issues that have arisen in that summary you just gave, it's that guy. And instead, what happens? Well, it looks like Cespedes, who's a free agent next year, is on his way out of New York for all of the reasons you mentioned.
For the team to post that missing, I don't want to be light here and call it a missing persons report, but to say we have no idea where he is, and fans were concerned about the welfare of Cespedes, for the team to do that, struck you how, Pablo?
It was a terrible look. It causes all sorts of theories. It asks the question, don't you have a relationship with this guy that maybe hinged on him paying 10% of his salary to you in a previous life? How did we get here?
KB?
None, it doesn't look good for anybody involved. I hope that Cespedes was not using this pandemic as an excuse to cover up the fact that he didn't want to be playing for the Mets. And I hope that the story is not true, that the Mets were trying to limit his playing in order to save some money on the backside with his contract. It's bad all the way around. A very Metsian operation.
Mina Kimes.
Yeah, bad all the way around seems to be the recurring theme in 2020. Cespedes clearly handled this poorly. I don't understand why the Mets put out that statement other than potentially to shame him. And above beyond all that, how did he leave his hotel without anyone noticing? That raises questions about, you know, oversight, which is obviously something that's been lacking in baseball.
You can't, as a team, release a statement that makes fans worry about the welfare of a player.
No.
I mean, you have to. You could say, oh, we're trying to be transparent about this.
Call the
police. That can't be the result that where everyone gets worried about a player's welfare. Kevin Blackstone, thanks for your thoughts today. Give a wave and a smile to the camera. Mina Kimes, Bob Lotori. Showdown in 2 minutes. Their friendship is on the line.
What's up, kiddos? I'm Clinton Yates of Around the Horn. Whenever I go to cover games or attend events in Los Angeles, I'm always keeping my eye out for the best-dressed person in the room. I saw Diego Luna at the Andor red carpet launch event, Star Wars, folks, and he looked head of state fresh. Now you can also be that person, too, whether you're sitting courtside, attending a fancy dinner, or going to a wedding. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into wedding season looking like $1 million for way, way less. They start at just $4.99. With Indochino, you can design the suit of your dreams and fine-tune every detail, including lapels, linings, monograms, pocket flaps, etc. A tailored fit from home. Set up your measurement profile on Indochino's website and choose customizations without even leaving the house. Look your best this wedding season. At the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code HORN to get 10% off any purchase of $3.99 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code HORN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Around the Horn is presented by Corona Extra. Find your beach. Part of Happy Hour.
Matt Viskirchen scared me on this call. He scared me. I was like a dog on the 4th of July. Aaron Judge, a home run in 5 straight games. Of his 6, 5 have given New York the lead. What does it mean, Pablo?
It means that we don't need Foley artists in baseball. I was worried the sound effects wouldn't be good enough, but this dude is echoing 470-foot homers regularly.
Mm-hmm. Mita?
He's the biggest star in the league right now, and I think it's sustainable. Our Hembo pointed out he's pulled 5 homers so far through 8 games. He pulled 6 through 102 last year. He is all the way back.
Right, okay. And you know what I said? Decibel level on the swing. His bat and ball sounds so different than anybody else in the league. Point Mina Kimes. We'll move it to Showdown 2 now. Take a look. You'll never see a last second finish better than this. I was going to say the greatest of all time. Colorado St. Louis. It wasn't last second. It was last millisecond. Got to clear the line before 000. Look at that. So there's that from the NHL restart. There's also been like how many fights? 4? And they become seconds into the game. But also this is a debate. Kachuk on Shifley, Winnipeg coach Paul Maurice said that it was intentional. What you got, Mina?
I don't usually like to diagnose intent on bang-bang plays like that, but given how bad it could have been, the blade going near the Achilles like that, I think it was pretty reckless.
Yeah, it was totally reckless. Kachuk's defense was that he trains with the dude in the summer, so they're friends, and he wouldn't do that. But I have been betrayed by Mina before, so I think it's pretty plausible, actually.
Pablo, the Sixers, Mina, TJ Warren, FaceTime goes to Kime.
Oh, Pablo, I'm going to make you feel so bad right now because I'm going to tell everyone watching at home to subscribe, listen to the latest podcast, the latest episode of ESPN Daily, which is a podcast I hosted until this week when you took over with a absolute banger of an episode. JJ Redick talking about life in the NBA bubble, his rap lyrics. Give it a listen.
So the friendship survives the showdown. We'll see you guys tomorrow.
I'm sorry for doubting you.